And good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our Morning Talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening. Glad to have you watching. We are on AM 580. We're also webcasting this morning on our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. So you have the option of watching this morning as I talk with Phyllis Wise. She's the Vice President and Chancellor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She came to the university just this fall. She's been here for 2 months. And we'll be talking a little bit with her about what in her first months here she's learned about the university. And also she will share some of her thoughts on some of the major issues in higher education today, including things like rising tuition costs and declining access and overall the challenges of serving the needs of today's students. For folks who are listening and watching, you're welcome to call with your questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too, and the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Just a little bit more about our guest. Before coming here to University of Illinois, she served as interim president of the University of Washington, and before that was the executive vice president and provost at University of Washington, where she was also professor of physiology and biophysics, biology and obstetrics and gynecology there at University of Washington. And we're very pleased that she could spend some time with us this morning. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
One thing I also do want to mention that for the benefit of people here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you will be holding a campus-wide town hall meeting this afternoon, 4 o'clock in the Colwell Playhouse at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. So, of course, anyone in and around Champaign-Urbana who's interested should stop by. And one of the things that I think that we're going to talk about is what, to this point, that you have learned, some of your first impressions gained as a result of talking with people around
right.
the campus. Maybe tell me a couple of things that you feel that you have learned now just in the first 2 months.
Yeah, I've been on this pretty intense listening and learning tour for the last 2 months or so, mainly to really get a handle on what people are thinking, why they're so passionate about this place, why they stay and invest so much time and energy, and then also to learn more about the challenges that we face. You know, I think no matter how much web browsing and talking with other people you do before you get to a place, I certainly was not aware of the depth of the strengths here. So in terms of my first impressions, the overwhelming theme that recurs all the time with every group that I meet with is how wonderful the people are here. And people come because they are enthusiastic about joining this community, both from a professional and a personal point of view. Collegiality, the community, the generosity, the willingness to collaborate and be in various different teams of people to make the world and this place better.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I took a look at was a story. This was a story that was in the Seattle Times, and I think it was a story that they published at the time that you were selected to come here, where you had made some comments about your feelings about running a university. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really struck me was you said something like, even though the time when you were there at Washington was very difficult, where they were having big budget crisis, nothing new for us here in Illinois, you said that even at that time when things were tough, that running the university was, quote, a wonderful experience. Now, the thing that I wonder is, and I wonder this often, for people who have solid academic careers, they teach, they do research, they excel in their fields, they're good where they are. What is it that would move someone to want to go into administration?
Well, I actually never felt that I left the faculty. I consider myself first and foremost a faculty member. But I do believe that as a leader in the academic community, one can have even greater impact than one can have when one only, you know, just teaches their classes and just does their own lab work. And it's a calling in some senses, but I really have felt that I've never, ever left the faculty.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about some of the, what are the major issues these days in higher education, and they're the kinds of things that it wouldn't matter where one was an administrator. Mm-hmm. It would be the same list of things, mm-hmm. I'm sure. And I think that, you know, every time I've spoken with the president, Dr. Hogan, and I suppose any time I would talk with anybody else, one of the first things that I would talk about would be the continued rise in tuition costs mm-hmm. and how over time it has become more and more expensive to get a college education. And, for example, just in the current academic year, the College Board reports that at public four-year schools, average tuition and fees rose 8.3%. So now it's a little over $8,200. That's for in-state students. So what they report is the so-called net price. That's the price that families pay after taking into account grants and aid and tax credits. They have increased by an average of about 1.4% a year for the last 5 years at public four-year schools. Financial aid's up too, mm-hmm. but I think that there are some people who argue that kind of increase is just untenable. So the question I always ask is, what can be done about that?
Well, I agree with everything that you're saying, that to increase tuition at the rate that we've been doing it over the last 10 years is not a tenable position for the next 10 years. I think it's really important to point out that the actual cost of education has not increased that much. It's who's paying for that education that has changed so dramatically. And in public research universities, the reason for that is that the state support has decreased pretty dramatically over that period of time. And so we have sought to figure out other ways of being able to pay so for the education that the students will get so that we can continue to allow them to have access to excellence. But I would agree with you. We have to figure out how to increase the amount of financial aid that we provide to students who cannot afford to come at the prices that that we are asking for. And over half of our students get a very significant amount of financial aid so that the sticker price is not what most students are paying. Nevertheless, there are some students who are paying that much. And we have to figure out ways to buffer that increase over the next several years. Mm-hmm. We have a very aggressive campaign right now going on to raise $100 million purely for financial aid for students. And I bet you once we get that first $100 million, we'll turn around and start a campaign for $200 or $300 million because it will be an ever-increasing need.
Yeah. Well, do you think that there's any going back? Should we expect that states will ever go back to the level of support that we had? Or is that just, or we just say we're really done with that?
Well, when you look at the last 20 years in terms of state support of higher education, and I would make you bet you could go any state you wanted to. Mm-hmm. I'm most familiar with Illinois and with Washington. It's an inexorable curve downward. And so, you know, when you are at all quantitative and you look at a curve over 20 years going down, and that's been through times of recession and times of very good economies in the United States, it would be, I think, foolhardy to think that when the economy turns around that all of a sudden the state is going to find new money for higher education. And that's why we have to think about different financial models to support higher education that at one time was supported so substantially by the state.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it will continue to be the case that for a lot of students they're going to have to take on significant debt so that they can go to college?
Well, we're trying very, very hard to control the amount of debt that students graduate with. It is very, very bad for them to start their first jobs having to pay back loans. And so we are seeking, as I mentioned, new scholarship money. We are looking into ways to allow greater work study. We are looking into ways that they can get through school faster by combining on-campus and online learning. Any number of things we're looking into to try and make sure that they don't graduate with a great deal of debt.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Phyllis Wise. She is the vice president and chancellor at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Her first official day on the job was
October 1st,
so it's been 2 months. And we're talking a little bit about what she's learned so far about the university and also talking about general issues in higher education. And your questions, comments are welcome. People who are listening and watching can call 333-9455. toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we also have email, and that's will-talk@illinois.edu. At any point here, people can participate. And we're webcasting this morning also on our website. If so, you would like to watch, go to will.illinois.edu. There seems to be plenty of evidence data to show that there is a value at least to having a four-year college education if all you look at is your potential for earning over your lifetime. Mm-hmm. People who have a four-year degree do better than people who have a high school degree. At the same time, I'm starting to read more and more people questioning even that. There certainly are people questioning the value of a graduate education. But there are some people that are even starting to ask questions, particularly taking into account what it costs, whether it was really worth it going to a four-year college.
Well, I have not seen any data that would convince me that a college education does not increase your earning capacity over your lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you have newer data than I do, but the data is pretty remarkable in terms of the earning power. But I think it goes far beyond that. What we know is that people with a college degree tend to vote. They are better citizens. They're more philanthropic. They contribute to the community in charitable ways as well as just good citizenship ways. They tend to be more healthy. There are many, many different aspects of life that appear to correlate with an increased amount of education. And, you know, I go back to that old saying that democracy depends upon an educated populace. And you're not going to have an easy time convincing me that a college education isn't worth the investment.
Well, maybe this is unfair, or it's just anecdotal.
Yeah.
Because you read stories with people where quoting people are saying, "Well, you know, I went to college, I got this degree, it cost me that much money, I've got this much debt," and they say things like, "If I had it to do over again, I might not have made that choice."
Well, again, you know, anecdotal stories are one thing and data and statistics are another. And, you know, you can cite Steve Jobs and Bill Gates as examples of people who did not need a college education to make a huge contribution in the world. But I don't think we should go by those kinds of exceptions.
Well, we have some callers here. Let's start in. And we'll talk first with someone on a cell phone. This is on our line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you, Dave, for taking my call.
Sure.
This may be a little out of sequence with what we're discussing right now, but I am not able to ask it otherwise. I was wondering if Ms. Wise could address what some futurists are saying, that the large residential university in the next 50 years will be a thing of the past, and I'm concerned about that and interested in what she thinks about that. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you for the question. What do you think?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think that there will be some ways of getting higher education and not ever have to step onto a campus. But my bet is that even well into the future, there will be a place for a campus-based university. We are adopting online learning as part of the way that students learn. So many times our students can take a course or a program online or take a course, what we call a hybrid course, where part of it is taught in the classroom and part of it is taught online. But my thinking is that students of the age of 17 to 25 will always want to be on a campus where not only do they have the one-on-one contact with a faculty member, but they also have an opportunity to meet their own cohort. And I strongly believe that the campus experience does give students that next step in socialization, that next step in an ability to debate, to have interactions with students that is still not possible if you do it exclusively online.
Yeah. Well, I know that when you raise this question, I think that often people with administrators, often they say they think part of the access issue and cost issue can be addressed by making more opportunities available online. And while that's fine, I'm sure also people would say, but that can't take the place of, as you say, one-on-one contact with the instructor, the opportunity to be in a classroom setting where there can be discussion right. where you have the opportunity to meet and have interaction with your fellow students. You don't get any of that if what you're doing is you're sitting there in front of a computer.
Right. And, you know, As I said, I think that we are fast adopting innovative ways of teaching, mainly online, and we want to use that as a way to allow greater access to students who cannot come to the campus. The data on students who go to exclusively online universities are that they are roughly 35 years of age. They're usually single, oftentimes a single parent, that they are trying to get a college education, and that is really admirable. I'm so glad that people are so interested in getting a furthering their education that they will go to that level. And we know that is an important element in access, and so we're trying to adopt it and be able to get the best of all possible worlds.
Let us talk with another caller. This is someone who is listening in Savoy and on line number two. Hello.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask, you know, the first 2 weeks on the job, first 2 months on the job, you witnessed the firing of our football coach. I'd like to ask about, the role of the public university and athletics, and also, as a college president, would you support a replacing the BCS with a playoff system for college football? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your questions. I am a firm believer in the importance of athletics within the academy, that is, within the university experience. You know, I was the provost at the University of Washington when the president of that university was Mark Emmert, and he is now the president of the NCAA. And he was the one who really convinced me of how important good athletics is in the whole academic program. And what he said is that athletics is the front porch to the university, and that oftentimes people get introduced to the university through athletics. And when we train our student athletes as the best in athletics and the best as students, I think we have and more than additive effect on that student's life. You know, in terms of whether I believe in a playoff or a BCS, I wish I could say that I were knowledgeable enough to have a good answer for that, but I'm going to leave that up to people who know better.
All right, fair enough. Our guest is Phyllis Wise. She's the vice president and chancellor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And if you have questions for her, 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You may also send an email to will-talk@illinois.edu if you would like to participate that way. In any case, whatever way you want to do it, your questions or comments are certainly welcome. Was there something? Was I about to interrupt you?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
I heard you draw a breath, and I thought, oh my, she was going to say something. Just to continue with this, the matter of the value of a college education, again, this may be a little on the anecdotal side, but I have read some things. This is not so much about undergraduate, but the value of an advanced mm-hmm. degree, particularly of a PhD, mm-hmm. where, again, and again, I this may indeed be anecdotal, but you sometimes read stories that here's a university professor, a student comes to her and says, you know, I really want to go for a PhD. And the professor says, well, if this is the burning desire for you, mm-hmm. if you really want to do this, mm-hmm. okay, I won't tell you no. But my advice would be don't. And it has something to do with perhaps the fact that there are only so many jobs. There's a question about, well, what does having a PhD prepare you for other than being a college professor? Mm-hmm. Would you say the same things about the value of an advanced degree, particularly a PhD, right. that you would about an undergraduate degree?
I think that's very discipline specific. That is to say, in many areas, a PhD is not at all necessary to be totally equipped to do whatever you want to do. In many of the arts areas, certainly that is not necessary. Even in business, a master of business education or a executive MBA may be all that is necessary for you to make the contributions and be able to lead an organization. In other areas, I think having a PhD is very important. For example, as you said, in the academy, most professors in most departments do have a doctorate, but not all. In many areas, for example, in the pharmaceutical industry, people who lead the lab usually have a PhD or an MD. So it really is discipline dependent. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the professor was a professor of to tell that student that it wasn't necessary for them.
Hmm. My suspicion is it might have been in the humanities and perhaps not in the hard sciences, mm-hmm. where I would think that it would be a little bit more. Mm-hmm. A little bit more difficult. Let's talk about the issue of retention. We talked a little earlier about the difficulty of getting into university and the difficulty of paying for education. Mm-hmm. There also is concern that I think many administrators have here and elsewhere that there are some students that they can actually get in, and mm-hmm. once they get in, you'd like them to graduate.
Absolutely.
you want them to be successful. And the numbers of students that are going, 1-2 years and then leaving are greater than anybody would really like. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you think. Are there some particular problems with retention and how you might address those?
Well, my understanding, again, I've only been here for 2 months, mm-hmm. But my understanding is the graduation rate, the 4-year graduation rate for the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is actually outstanding. We graduate the vast majority of students who come in within 4 years, mm-hmm. and that's pretty remarkable. We also have a very good graduation rate for 6 years, and oftentimes people who want to double and triple major or who want to take a semester off to go abroad or whatever don't graduate within 4 years. But you're absolutely right. Getting in is only the first step. And we need to pay very much attention to counseling and advising so that students really know what path they should take to navigate through the university. I think this is particularly challenging for students who come from families where they are the first in the family to go to college. Mm-hmm. Because those students can't go home and say, Dad, should I be taking chemistry and physics in the same semester or should I divide those up because they're too tough? Or, what should I take after I take my first English course? What would you suggest? And the parent can't give that kind of advice. And so they are totally dependent upon the people that we have at the university to help with counseling and advising. So I would agree with you completely. And as we get more and more diverse in our student body, that means students coming from rural areas or different states or even different countries who may be much less prepared to come to Urbana-Champaign, we have to really welcome them and continue to welcome them every day that they're here.
Mm. Well, let's take another call here from someone in the community of Belgium, and that's our line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all. Mm-hmm. I have a question about higher education that is probably a little bit more diverse than what you've heard in the past. I'm involved in things in life where I would love to monitor classes over at the university. I'm close enough that I could go. Mm-hmm. To monitor classes in some of the areas of fine arts and different things like that. And it'd be great to do it if you could do it online, possibly. Mm-hmm. Sit in the back of the room and just listen to somebody who is knowledgeable, mm-hmm. and be more than willing to pay a tuition for it. Mm-hmm. But it's not acceptable and it's not allowed. Why can't we change that policy? The university seems to need money. I'm glad to give it.
So, you're asking me a question that I don't know the answer to. I was unaware that you wouldn't be allowed to take a class, audit it, or take it for credit, even though you're not an enrolled student at the university. And I don't know what the rules and regulations are to being able to take an online course. So thank you for your question. I'm going to have to go back and do some homework.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. What it sounded to me that he was suggesting would be something like opening up the possibility of distance learning more to non-degree students. So, for example, if you were just someone who was interested in learning about history, mm-hmm. You could, in a sense, attend the lectures mm-hmm. that way, mm-hmm. simply by by watching them online, mm-hmm. which, as far as the university was concerned, it would mean, you know, putting cameras in all the classrooms and doing all the infrastructure right. And so forth, and for which the university could charge some kind of fee right. For, right. for being able to do that. Right. I don't know if anybody is really thinking about or has tried to do something like that.
Right. Well, online learning is usually a very specific set of classes or courses that one would take. Presumably for credit, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. And we don't videotape routinely all of our classes. So if the gentleman would like to take a class just by sitting in the back of the classroom, that's what I need to learn yeah. about. But as of now, I do not believe that we videotape every class so that you could just basically sit in your living room and have access yeah. to the class.
Well, I'm sure that that's not happening,
right.
and I don't know whether that could happen at all feasibly. But that I think that does raise an interesting question about do you think of the university as being a kind of a community resource
mm-hmm.
almost in the sense that the public library is a community resource,
mm-hmm.
and there would be some way to opening it up a little bit more. I mean, certainly there are things that happen on the campus that are open to the public.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But this is opening up maybe a little bit more
mm-hmm.
widely.
Well, this is, as I answered the gentleman's question, something that I need to learn more about.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do when we have a request for someone who wants to just sit in and audit a class? I'm afraid I just don't know the answer.
Well, this morning on Focus, we are talking with Phyllis Wise. She's the vice president and chancellor at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Has been now for 2 months, and she's been good enough to spend some time talking with us. We'll talk some more, take some more calls after a short break. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, presenting the CUSO Holiday Concert on Thursday, December 8th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The Chorale and Parkland Singers join the symphony in this Champaign-Urbana family tradition.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics for you every week. Let me mention that in the second hour today, we will look at some of the challenges involved in providing quality care in nursing home facilities, and we will have the administrators of two nursing homes here from our county here in the studio with us. Christopher Casper, he's the administrator of Country Health Care and Rehabilitation in Gifford, and also Chuck Schutte, he's the administrator of the Champaign County Nursing Home. We'll be talking about a number of things, but one thing we will be talking about is the system for rating nursing homes that we have, and how these homes and others in our area have rated, something that just recently the folks at CU Citizen Access have written about. There's a lot of good information there currently on their website. We have a report that we have been airing here on WILL on that subject. We'll run it again if you didn't have the opportunity to hear it, and then talk with our two guests about what it is they do, where they run nursing homes. That'll be in our second hour today. And the guest in this hour of Focus is Phyllis Wise. She's the vice president and chancellor of the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. She is the chief executive officer for the Urbana-Champaign campus. Prior to coming here, she served as interim president at University of Washington. And then before that, she was the executive vice president and provost there at University of Washington. She was also, at that time, professor of physiology and biophysics, biology and obstetrics, and gynecology. Before that, she also had posts at UC Davis, at University of Kentucky, Lexington, and she also was on the faculty at University of Maryland, Baltimore. One more time, I also do want to mention as well that she will be having a campus-wide town hall meeting this afternoon at 4 in the Colwell Playhouse at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Anybody who would like to stop by is welcome to do that. And in part, she'll talk a little bit about some of the things that she has learned so far as she's getting to know Champaign-Urbana and the University of Illinois. And for people who are listening or watching us online, WILL.illinois.edu, please do take the opportunity to call. If you have questions, comments, you'd like to be a part of the conversation, you can certainly do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We also have email will-talk@illinois.edu. I have an email here that I'd like to raise, and I'm not sure how you can comment on it because it doesn't offer very much in terms of background information. However, I do want to use it here and see what you have to say. And the person who writes in and says, why do you ignore complaints about harassment, job discrimination, and retaliation against scientists at the University of Illinois? I'm afraid that's all. I have no more background on the question than that. That is what the person writing in has given. So maybe you might talk about the issue of job discrimination, retaliation, harassment as far as faculty members are concerned.
There is no truth to that allegation, actually. We take very seriously any time anyone believes that they have been discriminated against for any reason. And we have a whole process of making sure that we check on that accusation, that we go and gather evidence both from the person who has brought up the allegation as well as going to the faculty or the supervisor who has been involved with this person. And so we do a very, very thorough check of anything that is brought to our attention.
All right. That's probably the best response we can give, given the question that we've had to work with. Let me give you another one here. This has also just come in on email. The person writes that for-profit universities have grown rapidly recently and wondered if you would comment on the pros and cons of these institutions.
Mm-hmm. You know, these are predominantly ones that teach totally online. And as I mentioned before, I think that they probably have a place in the educational system for people who absolutely cannot get to a campus for any part of their education. And it's really important that they have opportunities to get an education as well. I think it's also important to know that those for-profit universities cost a great deal, and their records in general, their record of graduation, graduating students without debt is not very good. So there may be a place for them. We are not trying to compete with them at all.
All right. Other questions, comments, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. This is perhaps nothing new, but recently there has been some attention given to students and how hard they work and what they're learning. One book that was just recently published is titled Academically Adrift, Limited Learning on College Campuses. You're familiar with it,
yes.
I'm sure. And it got quite a lot of attention in the media. And it found things like this. 45% of students did not demonstrate any significant improvement in their learning during their first 2 years of college. 36% did not demonstrate significant improvement in 4 years of college. And those who did tend to show only modest improvement. And the people who did this study, their conclusion was that students weren't working hard enough. And the reason they weren't working hard enough is that their teachers weren't demanding enough.
Right.
Yeah. So I suppose forever, you know, people have thought students were slackers.
Yeah.
I don't really think that
the younger
true.
Generation
Those
was never
kids
as good
today,
as us,
exactly
right?
right.
as we are.
Exactly right. But I'm particularly interested in this because really the finger ends up being pointed at the faculty and the
right.
administration,
right.
And they're saying, you're not pushing the students
right.
hard enough.
Right. You know, I think whenever something like that comes up with those kinds of appalling statistics, we probably both the student and the faculty and the institution should be looking and reflecting on whether or not we're doing something wrong. And clearly, I would bet that all three, the institution, the faculty members, and the students are all not quite doing what they should be responsible for. You know, I wish that when I went to undergraduate school, I had the kind of opportunities that are available to students now. Learning in the classroom, learning online, externships, internships, studying abroad, etc. But it does take some initiative to take advantage of all of those opportunities. In a big institution like this with 45,000 students, one can sort of just slide under the radar screen and get a degree after 4 years. But it's such a shame to do that when you have so many opportunities and so many options to learn and really transform your lives, that I hope that we help them. I hope we help the students to realize all the different things that they can do during their 4 years here. And then I hope we count on them to be mature enough to take the initiative and really do some learning on their own.
See, I think this is a difficult business. When I look back to my undergraduate education, I'm not sure that I wish I could do it over again, but I think if I could do it over again, I would work at it a lot harder, and I would like to think maybe I would get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah.
But that's, I just don't know if now, well, you know, the perspective that we would have now, we're not the people that we were, so I'm not really sure what it is that anybody, chancellor, president, professor, is going to do to push students if they're not going to push themselves.
Yeah, well, I think it is our job to expose them to as many different aspects of the university as possible, you know, through small groups and et cetera, et cetera. And I've talked with a few freshmen and a lot more freshmen at the University of Washington who immediately jumped in and just went deep and looked for everything that they could possibly do. And others that, you know, when they were seniors said, gosh, now I wish I could spend 3 more years here because I finally realized what all are my options. And some of us who, you know, it takes 10 years to say, I missed an opportunity. I think it is our responsibility in a place that is this big and this complex to help the students to really learn about what their options are. But you can only take a horse to water. What is that saying? You can only take...
You can lead them to water but
you
can't
make
them
drink. Right.
Yes. All right. Let's go back to the phones here. Paxton and line 4. Hello.
Oh, hi. Wonderful guest there today. I had a couple of comments. One has to do with sports. I think most universities are noted for their sports rather than for their academics. It's kind of unfortunate that coaches' salaries reflect that emphasis, I think. You don't see University of Edinburgh or Sorbonne or Oxford or Lund touting their basketball, soccer teams, and so on. And of course, Hutchins turned the University of Chicago into a great academic school, especially the Divinity School, getting Tillich and others there. And I think education... college education shouldn't be thought of, first of all, as how much you can earn when you get out of there. I think it's more important that you get a liberal arts education, promote thoughtful and intellectually developed aesthetic thinkers. And I think your guest has alluded to a lot of that, and I just heard part of it. But that's all my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very, very much for those comments. It is true that college athletics is unique to the American system of education, and certainly not all universities have an athletics program. And I'm very proud of the fact that at the University of Illinois, it appears to me from my first 2 months here that we take athletics seriously, but we take it seriously within the context of academic excellence. And so I think the balance is exactly right. I'm very proud of the fact that Mike Thomas is our athletic director here and is guiding the coaches of each of the different sports that are here. I also think that it's really important that we understand that we're a university first, right? And that athletics is a way to enrich the experience of both the people the students who take part in it, as well as the fans. And whenever it enriches your experience, I think it's great.
Well, this is not a new issue, and it's not going to go away. And people have been talking for a long time about particularly whether it's good for the university to be involved in sports to the extent that some are, with very big, particularly programs for football and basketball. Mm-hmm. And periodically and fairly regularly, something comes along that's just another big stick to whack that. Mm-hmm. That that subject with, and probably the last thing was the Ohio State University hiring a new coach, and they're paying the guy $4 million, and he's the highest paid coach in college sports. And that just leaves a lot of people shaking their heads and thinking, well, what could they be thinking?
Right.
How is that worth that much money, and what does that say about what the university thinks is important?
I agree with you completely on all those points. I am very proud and very pleased that the University of Illinois was interested in my coming here, and because I would not have gone to a university where I felt that sports was out of balance with the main mission of the university.
Well, do you really think, though, and again, on a fairly regular basis, college presidents get together and they talk about this issue, and people talk about the need for reform, and people talk about what might be done. I wonder whether you think that anything really substantial or dramatic is going to happen. Are there any big reforms you think that are actually on the horizon?
You mean, am I going to be able to influence Alabama
are you
or Ohio State? I believe that my first obligation is here, and as long as I'm the chancellor here and President Hogan is the president of the whole university, I suspect we'll be able to keep this in balance here.
Yeah. What do you think when people talk about paying student athletes about that? Is that something, could you ever conscience that?
No, I mean, I really do believe in what Mark Emmert has said, and that is that we are talking about student athletes, not athletes. And they are here to train to be the very best athletes, but they are also here to train to be the very best educated students that we can possibly produce.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Phyllis Wise. She's the Vice President and Chancellor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We have about 10 minutes left, and questions are welcome. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We're on now online at will.illinois.edu, and you can write in to will-talk if you'd like to send in an email. Just a little bit earlier in the first part of the program, we talked about issues of access. We talked about tuition. We talked about retention, that sort of thing. Now in education, particularly at elementary and secondary education, one of the big buzzwords it has been for a while now has been accountability. And that people say, I believe in schools and I believe in supporting them with my tax dollars, but I also want to make certain that those dollars are well spent and that the children are learning and achieving. And we try to find various ways to measure that, none of which I think satisfies anybody really completely, because a lot of it has to do with standardized testing. Well, there are people who are starting to talk about accountability at the university level, and legislators particularly who are saying, well, if the state is going to be supporting the university, then we're expecting the university also to produce good students, and we're expecting that students who enter will graduate. And people look at various kind of ways to determine this. Now, I don't know if anybody's really talking seriously about having graduating seniors take a test to see what they have learned. What do you think about those kinds of demands for accountability for higher ed?
I completely agree with him. I mean, I think that performance metrics should be part of our DNA. Students take tests at every course, and so it's not that they haven't been tested to see how much information they have acquired. And I think testing how much they have actually learned to learn, whether or not they've actually learned how to learn, is a little bit harder to measure. But we have measurements of what we are doing with our taxpayers' money and what we are doing with tuition. In fact, just yesterday, the president and the chancellors and several other academic and administrative leaders went over what we call our dashboard. What are the metrics that we really believe are important measures of quality in terms of the kind of learning and discovery experiences that we are giving our students? You know, how many of our students are actually graduating in 4 years? How many are graduating in 6 years? What are our trends in terms of diversity? Are we increasing the number of students of color over a certain period of time? Are we increasing the faculty of color? What are our incoming ACT scores in our students. There are all sorts of measures that we are tracking to make sure that we are always on an upwards trajectory in terms of quality and access.
Mm. The big difference, obviously, the big difference between the university and secondary education and primary education is that you're required to go to school at a certain level. But then when you come to the university, you know, it's up to you. You're paying your money,
right,
and it's up to you to achieve. And this goes back to the question about, you know, do we push students hard enough? Would you see, I guess, any change in that model that basically says, well, you know, it's up to you and whether, you know, it's their money and whether the students take full advantage of the experience or not, that's pretty much up to them.
Well, I think that there are some classes in which attendance is actually taken, but other classes where they're not, because we do believe that we're working with young adults and not children any longer, and that it is their responsibility to make sure that they go to class and learn the material. You know, it's a wonderful combination. It's a wonderful age, right? These are students who are truly young adults who have the privileges of voting, are allowed to drink, et cetera. And we don't want to treat them as though they are 5-year-olds, but we do want to guide them.
Yeah. We have about 5 minutes left. We have a couple of calls. We have been handed a note here that apparently it says this, at least in part, responds to an earlier question, that we are told that community members may seek permission to audit courses by calling the appropriate college office and gaining approval from the dean. So that
Great.
At least, so that says, that doesn't answer the need of the guy who would like to do it from his house.
Yeah, yeah.
But if what you want is to come and sit in the classroom with the other students, that is possible.
Oh, so glad that we got that answer.
Let's talk with some other callers. We have several. We'll try to get them all. And first is Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Go ahead.
Good. I had just a quick comment about the talk about sports. I'm a professional student at the U of I, and welcome to U of I community. But with Ron Zook especially, he was paid $1.75 million. And there's talk of the university paying $2.5 million for a new coach. So there seems like there's been a lot of lip service about how you don't want sports and athletics to be out of skew, but that would seem as if it is out of skew. So I was wondering if you could comment about possibly paying a new coach $2.5 million. Thank you.
All right. Well, can you comment on that?
I can't actually comment on that. I don't know. I know that we are right now recruiting a coach. I do not know the state of the negotiations with that person. And I, too, am worried about salaries that get out of line with, you know, their relative importance. But I also believe that we are, in some senses, influenced by market forces. And what I do believe is that if we want to do something, we want to do it at an excellent level. That's what we're used to. That's what people expect of us. And it's not that we are willing to pay anything for that level of excellence, but we do have to pay attention to our competitors.
All right. Then let's go to another caller. This is Urbana, and this is line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I, too, have a comment about the athletics at the University of Illinois and excellence and all of that. I got my doctorate at U of I a few years ago. In my opinion, athletics is way out of proportion in a crazy way at this university. I had a friend who was also in graduate school at the time, and her job at the university was to help athletes pass English. She actually worked with them to try to get them to write well and do their essays themselves. She was dressed down by a coach for doing that. The coach wanted her to actually write the essays for the athletes. That's wrong. And maybe the party line or the marketing line to the administrators from the athletic department is that they emphasize excellence and scholarship, but I don't think that's true, or she wouldn't have had this job. Well, that's my comment. I mean, I could go on and on about athleticism and academics at the university ad nauseum, but I think it's an enormous problem here. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, again, you can comment however you would like.
Well, I can't comment on that particular caller's comments. What I do know is what we strive for. What I don't know is whether there are exceptions to those goals. And certainly I'm sure that the athletic director and the coaches talk about this a great deal and try to maintain the highest level of ethics in this area.
All right. We're coming down to the point where we have about a minute or two, a couple of minutes left. There, we've just touched very briefly on a lot of things, and I would hope that in the future we'd have an opportunity to talk some more.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I hate to be so negative, but that's my job. I'm a talk show host. And I read things that suggest that people who are administrators in a higher education are generally concerned about the future of the American university and whether it will continue to be whether the American university will continue to be the envy of the world and will continue to draw top students. And there seems to be a lot of worry out there. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with financial issues. But also some of it seems to have to do with feelings about the quality of the student.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the future?
Well, I think the quality of the students who apply to the University of Illinois has remained, if anything, even more, has increased. The quality has increased of our applicants over the years. I am concerned about whether or not higher education is valued by our society. Now I'm talking about the broader American society, because if it is not valued, then certainly the desire to go to college is going to wane. And I think that would be really, really awful to the future of this country. We are a global leader because we have highly educated people who are able to contribute to the world economy. And I don't mean just the financial economy. I mean the health economy, the sustainable environment economy. And I think that does depend upon higher education. I believe this is essential to the health of our nation.
The guest this morning with us, Phyllis Wise, she's the Vice President and Chancellor at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Once again, I want to mention that there will be a campus-wide town hall meeting this afternoon, 4 o'clock, in the Colwell Playhouse at the Krannert Center for Performing Arts. She is inviting everyone who is interested to stop by, and she'll have some things to say about her first 2 months here, and we'll go from there, and hopefully on another day we can talk some more.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks very much for being here.